Hello, I'm Josh Bittner. Thank you for subscribing to the Market Analysis Podcast. We appreciate your support.
This is the Friday, September 25, 2020 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. The bulls ran out of feed, with many markets giving back last week's gains. For the week, December wheat fell 31 cents, while the nearby corn contract declined 13 cents. It only took a week for the soy complex to erase most of the nearly 50-cent rally as the Chinese buying spree stopped and the combines rolled. The November soybean contract fell 41 cents. December soybean meal weakened 3.50 per ton. December cotton expanded 29 cents per hundredweight. In the dairy parlor, October Class 3 milk futures decreased 73 cents. The livestock sector was mixed. December cattle shed 45 cents, November feeders dropped 238, and the December lean hog contract gained 90 cents. In the currency markets, U.S. dollar index expanded 174 ticks. November crude oil fell $1.09 per barrel. COMEX gold plunged $90 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index declined nearly 11 points to finish at 346.80. Joining us now to give us some insight is one of our regular market analysts, Angie Setzer, and a new face to the program, Chris Swift. Hello to the two of you.
Good afternoon.
All right, Chris, we'll get to you in a little bit. You can sit and listen to Angie. Angie, we got to start with this wheat market. Last week, we didn't think it was going to be a story compared to corn and soybeans. And then this week, there's some positive news for the price to go up, but man, the market sure didn't reflect it, almost 5.5% down. There's dryness in Europe, Black Sea region, but that's not enough to offset what? What is pulling this market lower?
Well, I think it's important to realize we were back up to the highest levels we've seen, you know, since July there for a while. Dease was up into the well above 550. We're looking at new crop. July 21 has been trading well into the 580 range plus, looking at Chicago especially. That's the market I tend to trade and focus on here. So I think we really were due for a correction. Obviously, when you're looking at Kansas City wheat, though, you cannot ignore the Southern Plains dryness, how dry it is, how dry it's likely to be because of La Nina. And so I think that you could see some transition between the two market structures here, where Chicago wheat's going to be going into the ground, or has been going into the ground, into really nice soil conditions, really good planting conditions, and really high incentive to increase those acres, whereas Kansas City wheat's almost exactly the opposite. So it would not surprise me to see Chicago wheat start to sink a bit more, and maybe Kansas City wheat get a little bit of a bid. Strongest, or the biggest problem Kansas City wheat has, is just getting those outside investors to come in and start purchasing. But we are paying attention to what's going on. Australia does look like they'll have a bigger crop. Argentina is going to have a smaller one, but does that matter with what's taking place geopolitically there in their country? Ukraine's exports are down. Their production is lower. Russia's wheat's getting more expensive when you look at some of these offers that they're putting out into the world. So still a lot of moving parts in wheat. Still a lot of wheat globally, though. Still a decent amount of carry out here domestically on all three sides. And so wheat's really going to have this ebb and flow of, is there a potentially bullish story, especially with looking at what's going on in the Southern Plains, combined with it's wheat. And everyone likes to just sell wheat and move on. So we're going to really see some continued volatility there, you know, well into the January acreage report and then beyond into next year production.
All right, so the big question is, are you buying or are you selling this contract? Let's stick with Chicago, since that's what you're...
Chicago wheat right now, I still think, is overpriced by about 25 or 30 cents on our side here in the short term. And so I definitely am still, when I'm working with customers, we're still active sellers on something if they haven't had anything sold yet in the, you know, in the recent history.
Okay. All right, let's move to corn. Combines are rolling pretty quickly around the Corn Belt. There is some forecast for rain in northern Minnesota towards Wisconsin over the weekend, and then Missouri through Ohio. That'll slow it down there just a little bit. Yields, everybody's, you know, those first yields, very much holding their breath to see what's out there. What's out there?
You name it, you'll find it. I mean, there's some better than expected that you're seeing in certain areas, people that are happy with what they're getting. I do think, you know, I think we can all agree that the crop size that we thought was out there in August and even in you know, potentially the September report that the USDA put out is probably a little bit too high. Most of what I'm hearing in these certain areas, you know, Illinois, especially where we thought we were going to have, you know, a lot of folks that I've talked to there, you know, initially were thinking they were going to have a record crop, are now thinking they have a good crop. It's probably above APH, but not as much as what they had thought originally. Same for Indiana, Ohio. Iowa is an extremely mixed bag. Obviously, you're seeing a lot of much lower than anticipated yield numbers because of how dry they've been. But then you have the dark horse, which is Kentucky, Tennessee. You know, Kentucky, I don't know where they're going to put all the corn that they're trying to produce and harvest right now. And so it's really going to be, I think, varied. And so a variable crop isn't a record crop, right? So I think that we'll continue to see some potentially lower production numbers out of some of the bigger producing states, maybe some higher numbers. There's some places in Kansas that have been, you know, I have one guy that I talked to there, he's part of our peer group, that said it's the best crop he's ever had. It's a record crop. He's super excited. And so I think you'll see some areas that haven't had really good crops yet have some really good crops. And then the areas that we really kind of rely on as being the consistently larger producer, you know, across the Corn Belt, we'll probably see some smaller numbers come in than what they had anticipated even.
All right. So 363 is one of those technical support levels. We're getting darn close to that. Do you anticipate us heading below 363 when we open up on Monday?
We could potentially see some harvest pressure. I mean, it's definitely going to be an important thing. I think we'll dip below it. It's just a matter of whether or not we hold at 360 or come back. Even if we do, though, I think long-term, there's enough support in this market structure that a dip below 360, I don't think, is something that lasts forever.
Okay.
I'm not saying we have to go back to 375 or 380, but I do think we'll kind of find a happy place between 340, 345, 360, 365, and just kind of stay there on the front month for a while until we feel more comfortable with what's taking place from a demand standpoint, what's taking place overall from a production standpoint, and, you know, what we're going to see come out of South America.
All right. So this is a question for beans a little bit, as it is corn. You got a lot of people that have come in and gone long on some positions here. What happens when they start moving from that side of the boat? What's going to force them to move? What does the producer need to watch for an indicator of they're starting to go from one side of the boat back to the other? I better sell.
I think we're seeing some of it. I think we've kind of tested some of those weaker longs here this week. You know, the hardest part with the CFTC report that we get, so we get the numbers on Friday of what traders, you know, what traders are trading in what direction or what is being allocated. And the hardest part is it's as of Tuesday. So you have three full days of trade that you don't know really what's been happening. Funds have been estimated to remain long, but I do think you've seen some slippage there. I really don't think you see anyone aggressively exit the position until we feel comfortable with what's taking place in Brazil.
Okay.
Same to be said for Chinese imports. I don't think you'll see Chinese imports necessarily slow or even, you know, really not get shipped until we know for sure what's going to happen with Brazil. And for the next couple of weeks, they remain relatively dry.
All right. So, Chris Swift, what's the cattle producer listening to this thinking right now? What's your question for Ange here? What's the biggest feeds a big need for this market right now? We keep expanding. Let's talk cattle on feed. The report that came out here just a couple hours before we taped. What'd you see in that report?
Well, it showed a little bit of more elevated inventory coming out. We showed with 104% on feed, a 9% increase in placements, and a 3% decline in our marketing. So we're going to have elevated inventory on feed for the next several months. And, of course, we'll need that corn to feed them. And we've always had a pretty good corn crop for the last 3 or 4 years to do that. And seems like $4 seemingly to be the high end of it, and somewhere between $3.50, $3.30, the low end. And here we are at $3.60. So we're right about in the middle. And we didn't see the cattle market respond too awful much to the rise in feed costs. So I'm not real sure that those margins or the percent gains that we've seen in corn are enough to impact the feeder market just to be yet.
All right. So the feeder market, I've been reading you for the last couple of weeks, and I can just see you scratching your head trying to figure out, because you anticipated that there was going to be some of this expansion in the feeder market. Who's expanding and why?
It looks like the North. We have a lot of farmer feeders in the northern areas there that will have under 1,000 head lots or feed yards that they will that they'll feed those cattle out into. A lot of them are custom feeders, or they will actually be going to a high-end scale restaurant or something for that beef. But we noted that in the north, they're paying in the low 150s, upper 148s for a lot of these 7 and 8 weights. And when you move down in the south into Texas and Oklahoma, they're trading in the 136 to 138 range. And the difference between the two has kept that feeder cattle index between about 138 and 142 for close to 4 or 5 weeks now.
All right. When you look at these, you also wrote something that caught my attention this week. There's a story floating out there about some of these cattle in the lots. There's a question about maybe there's a couple of corners being cut in getting these feeders moved. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think what a lot of it is more so in the calf market. So what we're seeing is some elevated numbers of calves coming in either unweaned or unvaccinated. And that kind of tells a little bit of a story. Do we believe that the market is in a need for higher end cattle that already have these vaccinations? If not, then we're probably going to see those input costs be passed along to someone else. I'll take the lower amount just so I don't have to spend the labor and the input cost of having to increase my vaccination or wait for the time frame where I've got them weaned and I'm going to allow somebody else to do that. Of course, we get a little bit lower price for those calves out there, but some people have more of a nursery type area and are willing to take on those more sickly calves. Some of them are not, and they want nothing but the already weaned, ready to go on a hot backgrounding ration and ready to go.
All right, so feeders on Monday. Are you buying or are you selling this market?
Actually, we've been very protective of this market. We think that we've got a lot of cattle to have to move. The disruptions that we saw in March and April are just now starting to get worked out. The cattle on feed report being a little unfriendly, and with the calf market, the cattle feeder now seemingly have loaded up a lot of cattle on feed that will be finished at a time frame that is not necessarily conducive to big beef demand. So I think probably coming in Monday, we'll probably see a little bit lower trade. Okay. The feeder market moving down into the 135, 130 area would not be out of the ordinary at all. Even the northern cattle could retain their $4 or $5 premium to the south and still move that market down into the upper 130s.
What's it telling you when a large grocery store like, say, Kroger is having a sale on beef? What's that telling you on the cattle market?
We discussed that on it. Kroger's is doing their New York strips for $5.99. We noticed that Publix is doing it for $7.99, and it's a catch-all. So we either look at it from the standpoint of we're having to lower the price of meat in order to move it, but we do believe that that will move some beef, too.
All right, so what about that cattle market? Where's that thing headed, up or down?
You know, the cattle market is interesting because we have been able to increase our slaughter rates. We have been able to get the consumer from the significant shifts that we've seen over the last 6 months. They've now settled into habits, and those habits have been formed over the last 4 or 5 months and probably aren't going to change again unless there's something dramatic to change with either their discretionary spending habits. So the fat market, we know we'll have plenty of inventory to work from. Our concern is now going to be the consumer and whether or not they are going to have to be asked to shift once again in their discretionary spending habits. We either increase the mask, we decrease the mask, we settle some of the social issues, we increase some of the social issues, and all of those have impacts to the consumer as to whether they want to go out and enjoy a dining experience or whether they want to keep that beef at home and enjoy it there.
Oh, Chris, see, you led me right back to Angie, because Angie, I think you downplay your abilities when it comes to talking livestock. I believe, Angie, you've said a time or two, we celebrate life's big moments with a steak, right? Angie's always said that. I've heard her say that, and we seem to have a little bit of a freeze up there. Hopefully we get her back. There we go. Now I hear you, right? We celebrate big moments with beef, don't we? Still frozen. All right, Chris. Chris, we're going to go back to you. Let's go into the hog market now.
No one celebrates life.
All right. We'll come back to you in a minute, Angie. Chris, let's talk hogs. This is something that you still have some. There was a hog report this week. There were two reports, cold storage and another pigs and hogs report. What did you see out of those?
In the hogs and pigs report, for the first time in probably 9 quarters, we had a dead even number for all hogs and pigs. We had 100%. We had been increasing that hog number for several quarters in a row. The kept for breeding has declined just a little bit to 98.5. So the actions that we saw from the COVID response probably changed a little bit of the pork producers' minds to just slow some of that expansion. The previous issues with ASF that we felt that we would be exporting a tremendous amount of pork to China, some of that has come through now in the later stages, but it didn't come through in the earlier stages. So I believe pork producers were continuing to ramp up product in hopes for that export that didn't really pan out as much as what they thought. So we had excessive pork here in the United States that we had to deal with domestically. Now that we're seeing more and more pork exports to China, that's relieving some of the pork issue, as well as now we know the producer is going to cut back just ever so slightly on that pork production. So with that cutback in the pork production and China buying, maybe hog prices, you know, when they start going down, they go down to a little bit higher level. And when they go up, they go up to a little bit higher level.
All right, Angie, you with me now? Back. All right, you're back.
He was talking about steak. I had to go grab one. So
I know it's all right. Let's go back to soybeans here for a moment. You know, that's a big feed. That's a big concern, or that's a thought that the Chinese are buying our United States soybeans to help feed their herd as they ramp back up. Is that what ran us back up? So then what's running us back down?
I think we just got a little hot under the collar for a minute without any real extensive reason to kind of continue on beyond where we were. I mean, we had rallied $2 in 4 weeks, 6 weeks time. And so a lot of times you have to get some sort of correction. Always liken it to building a house of cards. You can't build it straight up. You have to kind of have it fall down a little bit, maybe widen out that foundation. And so I'm not overly concerned with this correction. I do think we could see some continuation of it with harvest pressure coming into play. But I think we really have a decent amount of support underneath us, because not only are we seeing this export market return, we're seeing crush margins improve because of what's taking place in Argentina with their soybean meal export capabilities and what's happening, you know, elsewhere around the country when it comes to this feed demand for all of this livestock that we have.
All right. There's always conspiracy theories out there, and one of them involves what China is up to. I had one person write me this week and says China's doing a pretty good job of buying smaller amounts and making the market insensitive, doing what they would call a grain robbery, just a little piece at a time. And it leads us to our question that Matt in Amherst is asking. Why did China wait till now to do all these purchases instead of spreading them out throughout the year so they wouldn't move the market as much with so many consecutive days of buying?
It's interesting. I had a friend point out that we didn't have that ceremonial purchase. Remember how we used to have those?
Yeah.
Do you remember that back in the day where they'd come to Iowa and we'd sell, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 million metric ton? And so that's a little bit of a different sort of feel. You know, it is piece by piece. And I don't think it's making us insensitive. I think the market's rallied as much as what it has because of this continuation in buying. It may become a negative if they stop doing every day, because we had this record stretch of purchases being made. And so maybe that does become a negative because we get so used to that bull being fed daily, right? And so I don't know why China waited until now. I think there's some political motivation. I think there is some hedging of bets, i.e., you know, maybe President Trump gets reelected and continues to really put the pressure on them to get this phase one trade deal, you know, kind of solidified. I feel like it has become a bargaining chip for them. You know, we had the action that they did last week with Taiwan. There's some aggression there that we've seen. We did see them kind of agree to back off with India on that border. So that's a little bit of a relief. But we are, you know, looking at what's going to take place with TikTok, what's going to take place with Huawei. You know, we have all of these things that are going on. And I think to a certain extent, China's purchases are a way for them to say, hey, we're doing what you asked us to do, so you need to kind of leave us alone and let us do our thing. So it'll be interesting to see just how it does play out. But right now, based on what we're seeing from a freight standpoint, from a cash pipeline standpoint, they're planning on taking those deliveries. And I think at this point, they've pretty well bridged themselves that gap between Brazilian supply availability and when that next crop is harvested.
All right, so you unpacked a couple of things. We do have a political question that we will answer in Market Plus, and we'll just leave it at that, Angie. So real quick, you got about 15 seconds. Are we is this high rally over for the next 2 months in soybeans? 10 seconds.
I think for the next 4 weeks, 2 weeks, yes. But I think we do see some recovery eventually. The support, okay. The floor has been lifted.
All right. It's Angie Setzer and Chris Swift. We'll talk to both of them. Thank you so very much for all your flexibility. That will do it for this installment of Market to Market. We will talk more in Market Plus, so be sure to join us there. You can find it on our website of markettomarket.org. As the Harvest Sprint hits full stride, take us along for the run as our Market Analysis, Market Plus, and MTOM podcasts are all available each and every week. Find them on our site or your preferred podcast provider. Next week, we'll bring together four of our analysts for a round table where we'll break down the quarterly grain stocks and then look at the trends then in the commodity markets. Until then, thank you so very much for watching and have a great week.